Good morning. We'll call the meeting of the Environment, Natural Resources, Policy and Finance Committee to order. Good morning, everyone. Welcome.
Good morning.
Representative Johnson.
Good morning.
Representative Fabian.
Representative, I didn't call you Representative Clark. Welcome to everybody who's watching and listening and has an interest in what we're doing today and the rest of this year. I'd like to start out with just some brief introductions of the members and so forth, and we'll start on the GOP side with Representative Green. Tell us a little bit about yourselves. We'll give you about two minutes, maybe three at the moment.
No need 2 minutes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
I'm Steve Green. I represent District 2B up in northern Minnesota, from Park Rapids and north and west of there.
Jim Neuberger, I represent Central Minnesota, District 15B. I'm between Elk River and St. Cloud.
Thank you. Jeff Backer, represent 12A. That's on the western part of Minnesota, seven counties. I live in Browns Valley, which is the hump, bump, tip, elbow, nose of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Dale Lewick, represent District 10B, all of Aiken County, and the non-metro area of Crow Wing County.
Representative Brian Johnson, District 32A, which consists of most of Isani County and northern Chisago County.
Hi, Sandy Lehman from District 5B, much of Itasca County and a swath right through Cass County.
Hi, Chris Wozinski, represent House District 16A. I represent down in the southwest part of the state, Lyon County, Redwood County, Lac La Parle, and Yellow Medicine. Marshall's my largest town.
Paul Torkelson, 16B, Brown County, Redwood County, and parts of Renville.
Josh Heitzman, as Representative Lewick said, he has the rural side. He teases me and says I have the metro side of Crow Wing County.
My turn. Joe Hoppe from Chaska. I heard we're going to learn to fish.
Lake of the Woods. Representative Bliss.
Matt Bliss, District 5A, that's the Bemidji-Walker area.
Jamie Becker Finn, 42B, northeast metro suburbs, so Venice Heights, Little Canada, part of Roseville, and part of Shoreview.
Rob Eklund, District 3A, I've got Kuching, Cook, most of Lake, and part of northern St. Louis County, and for the record, there's a little dispute on who the best looking class of 1976 grad is. My brother sits right next to me, so we'll see.
Hi, I'm Mike Sundin, originally from International Falls, and I am the best looking graduate in 1976, and always nice to have a wingman like Rob.
Peter Fisher, 43A, that'd be the suburbs of Maplewood, White Bear Lake, Matamidi.
I'm Clark Johnson. I represent District 19A, which is all of Nicollet County, a good chunk of the city of Mankato, and Kasota in Le Sueur County.
Rick Hansen. I serve as the DFL lead. I represent northern Dakota County, so Mendota Heights, Lilydale, Mendota, West St. Paul, and South St. Paul. So those of you who are in the cities, come to northern Dakota County. We have some great restaurants, and I would encourage you to stop in.
Hi, good morning, Mr. Chair. I'm Frank Hornstein. I represent District 61A, which is parts of downtown and southwest Minneapolis.
Did we miss anybody? I'm Dan Fabian. I represent all of Roseville, Kitson, Marshall, and the part of Pennington County. That is truly northern Minnesota. And the snowmobiling is terrific up there right now. We've got about 2 feet of snow on the ground, and the ice fishing on Lake of the Woods has been fantastic. We've got a long weekend, so I'd invite everybody to come on up and enjoy it. So while you're there, I can help show you around. And would ask staff to introduce themselves. Mr. Eliff.
Bob Eliff, House Research.
Janelle Taylor, House Research.
Brad Hagemeyer, House Fiscal Analysis Department.
Kaylin Schroeder, Legislative Assistant.
Amy Zipko, Committee Administrator.
And to the
Peter Stromeyer, DFL Club.
Yeah. And these are the people that really help us a lot, and we need to keep that in mind when we're debating bills and so forth. I really appreciate the work that Kaylin and Amy have done, in particular up to this point. It's been a smooth transition. So thank you. Anybody have any other questions or comments at this time? And then otherwise we'll move ahead with the rest of the things on our agenda. That being said, all right, thank you. So what I'd like to do first is just kind of do a quick overview of the committee rules. I think that everybody's pretty familiar with these things. They really haven't changed very much. We would like to make sure that we do get started on time. So if you look at the rules, number two just mentions that. I do want to point out, you can read through these things, but numbers 7 and 8, 9, 10, and 11 have to do with some deadlines in the committee. If you'd read through that and take a look at those, we're asking that if you do have some things, testifiers and so forth, that you let Ms. Zipko know by 3 p.m. the day before who will be testifying. If they need any audiovisual hookups and so forth, we'd like to know that so that pages and so forth can do that. And we are in the process, by the way, of our pages today. They haven't been totally assigned yet, so our page today is whom?
Adam Huseman.
Okay, Adam, thank you for being here. Then number 8, again, if there are individuals who are here who are interested in testifying and so forth or out there, we'd certainly appreciate you being able to let us know by 3 o'clock the day before. Amendments to be pre-filed via email with the committee administrator, again, Ms. Zipko, at 3 p.m. the day before. There can be some exceptions to the 3 p.m. amendment deadline, and minor oral amendments during the hearings may be granted at the discretion of the chair, and I'll work with Representative Hansen on that, too. Okay. Any written materials to be distributed should be given to our CLA, to Kaylin Schroeder over here to my left, by 3 o'clock the day before. And, you know, we understand that occasionally there might be some variances from that, but if we could try to stick to that would certainly be helpful. Any questions? Representative Hansen, excuse me.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm trying to remember from last year, but amendments to the amendments, would they be like at 6, or if amendments have to be in at 3?
We usually just took those, but again, some sort of communication would be helpful. Okay.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Traffic was a snarl this morning. Would you introduce yourself for the committee, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Harry Miracle. I am the House Republican researcher for the committee.
And you do great work. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Anything else?
And Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that we've been trying to connect to go over things. And it's a new committee. We have a lot of new members and a new chair. And I think there's an opportunity here to work on bipartisanship and try to have a Minnesota's environment belongs to all of us. So how can we work together? One question I had, and it's not really a rule, but maybe it's something on how things would work, is how can, do you see if a member on our side of the aisle has a bill that they would be given opportunities for hearings? I'm not asking necessarily that it gets adopted, but at least having the opportunity to present to the committee. And I mean, we may have some ideas that would be helpful. Do you see that kind of, I realize the chair's discretion on giving hearings or giving the opportunity to hear a bill, but what's your approach on that?
Well, thank you, Representative Hansen. And I think that, in the years that I've been around here, I think that most people on your side of the table and your side of the aisle know that I've been fairly easy to work with. And I know there's some people who think at times I'm probably not very reasonable, but the people up in District 1A think that I am. I can assure you that we'll have some very serious discussions about DFL bills, and we'll see what the substance of them is. And I've worked with Representative Hornstein and Representative Eklund and Representative Fisher, early on, and when we were working on some stuff for White Bear Lake, and Representative Sundin and I, and of course the old Fargo South Bruin, Representative Johnson. We'll cross that bridge as we get to it, but certainly it's a priority of mine.
And then follow up on a different topic, Mr. Chair, maybe how the subcommittee works, how
Sure.
bills get referred, and just the process there with Chair Swazinski.
Sure. And for those of you that aren't totally familiar, obviously we do have the subcommittee chaired by Representative Switzinski. Basically anything, we're going to be using that committee as needed. So when an issue comes forward that Chair Switzinski and I and the committee administrator think that we should take there and maybe working with you, that will be the mechanism that we're going to be using for mining, forestry, and tourism. So, and we can talk a little bit more about that maybe when we get into some of the fiscal stuff that Mr. Hagmeier will be taking us through today too, but that's my plan.
I don't know if we have any other questions.
Okay. Representative Hornstein?
No, I'm good.
Okay, good. I like it when you're good.
Yeah.
Okay, so then at this point, then what I would like to do is we've asked Mr. Hagmeier to go through kind of an overview, a high level of the environment funds and related funds to the agencies and so forth that we will have jurisdiction over. So without any further ado, we'll let Mr. Hagmeier make this presentation. If you do have some questions, if you could kind of hang on to them at least. Yep. If you have questions, try to get Ms. Zipko's attention over here, and she'll get your name on a list. And if you feel it's something that you want addressed before we go on to the next portion of his report, we certainly can do that. Okay? Mr. Hagmeier.
All right, Mr. Chair. I'll start going through this document. It's a four-page document. It says Fiscal Analysis Department on the top of it. Like the chair said, it's a pretty high-level overview of different things. I'm sure it will spur a lot of questions. I can follow up with those later if you have them. Some I'm sure I won't have the answer on now. If you want to take questions during it, I'll just leave it up to the chair to call on you guys if you have questions on anything. A third of the way through the page, you'll see the entities funded. So these are all the agencies, entities within our jurisdiction for this committee that receive funding through this committee. The first one is the Department of Natural Resources, and then the Pollution Control Agency, and then as a subcategory under that, I have the Environmental Quality Board because it's housed through the PCA, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, the Minnesota Zoological Board, the Metropolitan Council, mostly their environment issues of parks, and then occasionally there are water bills that come to our committee as well, the Conservation Corps of Minnesota, the Science Museum of Minnesota, the Legislative Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources, that's the Environment and Natural Resource Trust Fund. It's typically a separate bill that will also come through this committee. And then Explore Minnesota Tourism is also in this committee, and that's new this year. Not the Explore Minnesota Tourism isn't new, it's new to this committee. underneath that, you'll see the different types of appropriations we deal with in this committee. I know it's pretty high level, and most of you know what these are, but just for some of you that might not, we have direct appropriations, a lot of times that's the general fund or some of the dedicated funds, but it's usually one-time appropriations or they might have a base going forward, but we have to write those in session law every 2 years. Underneath that, you have the statutory or standing appropriations. Those are typically the other funds, the non-general funds. These are ones that do not need continual appropriations in the session laws every 2 years or every year. The agencies are able to spend that money every year, whether we pass a bill or not. There's a decent amount of our budget that falls in that category out of the other funds, the Environmental Fund, the Game and Fish, Natural Resources, all have appropriations that are standing, but they also have direct appropriations. And then the last kind you'll see is an open appropriation. Our committee has a few that fall in that jurisdiction. One example would be like DNR firefighting. We typically just talk about this for the general fund appropriations, but these are ones where we estimate the amount in the fund balance of what the appropriations we're going to need, but we're not tied to that. Like DNR firefighting is a good example. If there's a fire, we're going to continue to try to suppress that fire and put it out no matter what the cost is, and we might go over our budgeted amount, which is $15 million a year. If you go to the second page, you'll start seeing the different funds that fall into this committee's jurisdiction. All the information, this again is very high level information and kind of short phrases for each one, but it's based on the November 16 forecast or current session law, wherever I was able to pull the numbers for this type of information. The general fund is basically the least restrictive of the different funds that fall in this committee. It can be used for a variety of different purposes. It doesn't have a certain statutory dedication or constitutional dedication like some of the other funds have. For the 16-17 biennium, the biennium we're currently in, the budget budgeted amount for our committee's jurisdiction is $386.8 million. I do want to point out that does include a one-time general fund transfer to the closed landfill fund of $71 million. So our base going forward is smaller than that amount. As you can see, it's $314 million. And sometimes PILT falls in our committee's jurisdiction. It's in the tax committee currently, and that's another substantial general fund chunk of money. It's $63 million for the past biennium, current biennium, I should say. The next fund is the capital investment fund. We typically would hear those bills here, but they get dealt with in the capital investment committee. The last capital investment bill of 2014 included $135 million in bonding and $15 million in general fund cash for the different agencies within our jurisdiction for a variety of projects like parks and trails development, facilities development, RIM acquisitions, things of that nature. Underneath that, you'll have the constitutionally dedicated funds, the legacy funds, the 3/8% sales tax. It's over $300 million a year between those funds in revenue. You can see the Outdoor Heritage Fund, which comes will start in this committee, I believe, and then we'll be going to the legacy committee after it makes it stop here, I believe, right? That's the path for that typically. Same with the Parks and Trails and the Clean Water Fund. Outdoor Heritage Council makes recommendations on that. The current appropriations are $110 million to restore, protect, enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. The Clean Water Fund is used to protect, enhance, and restore water quality in lakes, rivers, and streams, and to protect groundwater from degradation. That's, again, about $110 million per year. The Parks and Trails Fund, those funds may be spent to support Parks and Trails' regional or statewide significance. Currently, that appropriation gets divided between the DNR for State Parks and Trails, the Metropolitan Council for Regional Parks, and also the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails. And they've been going under a 40-40-20 distribution of the funds for the last few years. I also have the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund on here. Typically doesn't fund a lot of things in our committee's jurisdiction. In the past, it has had appropriations to like Egg or maybe the Science Museum or the Minnesota Zoo, but they'd be smaller appropriations, and most of that funding goes to agencies outside our committee's jurisdiction. Underneath that, towards the bottom of the page, you'll see the Environment and Natural Resource Trust Fund. This fund is credited with 40% of the net proceeds from state-operated lotteries through the year 2025. 5.5% of the corpus of the fund can be spent annually for projects. The amount for this current upcoming year is $50,700,000. And the Legislative Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources makes recommendations on those projects, and their upcoming recommendations for this year include 69 projects. At the end of the page, you'll see the Game and Fish Fund. The Game and Fish Fund has a number of accounts in it. I'm sure you guys will have lots of questions upcoming throughout the session about the different accounts and what happens out of them, but this is kind of high-level overview. The operations account in there is the largest of the accounts. A lot of the work is funded through that. And then there's a number of dedicated accounts underneath. You'll see like the Deer and Bear Management account, the Emergency Deer Feeding, Wild Survey Health, Deer Habitat Improvement, Waterfowl, Wild Trout, and Salmon, Wild Turkeys, Pheasants, things of that nature. Those are typically funded by the fees for those types of programs or your stamps or your licenses, and they go to a purpose dedicated for those types of issues. The first line on the second page, you'll see the Heritage Enhancement account. That's the lottery in lieu of sales tax. There's five accounts, four of which are in the Natural Resources Fund that are called the lottery in lieu accounts. They receive a portion of the money that would have been collected as sales tax on state-operated lotteries. The Heritage Enhancement Account gets 50% of that, and I think it's almost $14 million a year currently. There's the trust fund for the lifetime licenses. Minnesota, a number of years ago, went to being able to purchase a lifetime hunting or fishing license. We hold that money in an account, and the agency is able to collect the annual fee out of that account. And then there's also the Peace Officer Training Account.
Excuse me, Mr. Hagmeier. Representative Hansen, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think looking at that Game and Fish Fund, particularly when we get into agency overviews from the agencies, the Wild Survey Health Management, since we have the CWD issue going on right now, would really be important to hear from the agency on the health of that account. Or I don't know if Mr. Hagemeyer has some of that, but I think that's kind of a topic of interest that's right there. And then the one that looking back to last year, we had the the zoo kind of emergency funding. I think we'd like to hear from the zoo on what happened, you know, with that emergency money and how, if they're back flying right now. So,
Representative Hanson, do you have a bug in my office or something? Or no.
I think we think similarly on those.
Yes, thank you for bringing that up. But yes, we are making plans to address those issues. So, I'll be talking to you about that. Continue, Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, I can answer a couple of those if you want.
Sure.
A little bit. The Emergency Deer Feeding Wild Survey Day Health account has a carry forward into 18 of about $900,000. Typically, we spend a couple hundred thousand, maybe up to $300,000 per year. I believe I heard the agency reference they spent a little over $1 million over a three-year period back in the last outbreak when they did more substantial amounts of testing. So that fund has around $900,000 in it currently, and that's the account they would use for some of the testing. And then your other question was the Minnesota Zoo. I believe they've received emergency or whatever type of funding you want to call it, emergency funding, or in 2015 session, and then we gave them an additional appropriation during the session of about a $4.5 million increase. I want to say the original amount was $1.5 million or so. I don't know where that puts them at in their budget, but there was two different appropriations. They received a one-time emergency funding, and then they received an additional $2.25 million per year, $2.5 million per year, something like that. But they can speak more to their health of their operations. Back on the second page, where it says expenditures, towards the top, you can see the primary revenues into the fund. Towards the bottom of that paragraph are departmental earnings, about $63 million. That's the license fees for the most part. And then the grants through the Pittman Robertson and Dingell Johnson funds, excise tax on hunting and fishing related equipment is $34 million in 16. And then, as I mentioned, the lottery in lieu of sales tax for the Heritage Enhancement account is about $14 million.
So, Mr. Hagemeyer, would you, for the new people to the committee, would you just do a quick run through on the Pittman Robertson Dingell Johnson funds, where they come from, please?
Mr. Chair, I can try. I believe it's a 10.5% federal excise tax on, is it guns and ammunition for Pittman Robertson. I don't know if they have other items included in that. I know it's expanded over the years. The Dingell Johnson funds are fishing related equipment. It's boats and motors, and I don't remember all the items that all fall in there, but there's a number of related items like that. And again, it's 10.5% or 11% excise tax. The federal government collects a tax, and then it gets distributed to the states based on a formula. It's, I believe, related to the land area, or maybe it's the public land area in the state, and then the number of fishing and hunting licenses sold in the state. And then each state is capped at, I believe, 4 or 5% of the total that we can receive. Minnesota receives quite a good amount of Pittman Robertson money because we sell a lot of licenses and have a lot of land.
Very good.
Mr. Chair, if you're okay with it, I'll continue with the Natural Resources Fund. There's a number of accounts in the Natural Resources Fund as well. I listed 20 different accounts here, and there's actually more because there's kind of sub-accounts in it. There's the recreational vehicle accounts, the water recreation accounts, snowmobile, ATV, off-highway motorcycle, and off-road vehicle accounts. They receive funding through fees and licenses, but they also receive gas tax, unrefunded gas tax revenues. There's a state parks account. That's the fees and annual passes that people spend while they're at the parks. Then there's the other four lottery in lieu of sales tax supported accounts, and there's a state parks and trails account for that, the metro regional parks and trails account, and then also the zoo grants. And there's local trails, sorry. The non-game wildlife fund is in there. There's an invasive species account, forest management investment account, the minerals management account, the mining administration account, cross-country ski account, land acquisition account, the state land and water conservation account, and water and then also the water management account. And then the last one you see is natural resource dedicated funds. The agency tracks a number of other appropriations as kind of their own sub-accounts. So there are additional, you know, 10 or 15 different types of accounts. Like, for example, one was like the Balsam Boa account. It has $2,000 of revenue per year or something into it. So there's kind of minor sub-accounts within that one. The primary revenue into the fund as a whole was departmental earnings of $53 million, the lottery in lieu revenues of $13.9 million, and then the unrefunded gas tax revenue going to those recreational vehicle accounts of $21 million.
The total expenditures for 2016 were $95 million. At the bottom of the page, you'll see the environmental fund. It's mostly spent through the PCA, collected and spent through the PCA. There are a few minor appropriations that are or transfers out to other agencies. It's major a major funding for source for the Pollution Control Agency. They don't receive a lot of general fund support anymore. As you can see, the environmental fund appropriations just kind of by division within the PCA is the water program receives $22 million, the air program is $16 million, the land program is $7 million, and then the environmental assistance cross-media program is $31 million, and that includes $17 million that goes out to SCORE grants to the counties. Primary revenues into the count were the solid waste tax of $53 million, the motor vehicle transfer fee of almost $11 million, and then there's fees for other things like the air emission fees of $15.6 million, hazardous waste fees of $3 million, water quality fees of $5 million, pollution prevention fees of almost $1 million, and the fines and penalties about $1.6 million. The total expenditures for 2016 were $76.2 million, and in addition to that, there was a $19 million transfer to the remediation fund. So there's a substantial transfer every year from the environmental fund to the remediation fund to fund the work through that other fund. And that's the next fund you see on the third page or fourth page run now. The purpose of the remediation fund is for response and corrective actions to address releases of hazardous substances, pollutants or contaminants, agricultural chemicals, and petroleum for environmental response actions at qualified land site facilities, which the agency has assumed responsibility. The primary revenue source, as I stated, was a transfer from the environmental fund of $19.1 million in fiscal year 16 and a transfer from the petroleum tank release cleanup fund of $11 million. The departmental revenue that they actually collect into the fund is pretty small. It's $2.5 million. The total expenditures in 16 out of the fund was $43.7 million, and that included a one-time transfer out of the fund that was later transferred back into the fund. Underneath that, you'll see the Closed Landfill Investment Fund. This fund was created in 1999 to provide perpetual care at the closed landfills facilities that the state has assumed responsibility for. There's currently 109 or 110 sites that the state has responsibility for. They can't be expended until after fiscal year 2020. In this account's been kind of talked about a bunch the last few years. Back in 2010, $48 million was transferred out of the account for various reasons. It was set to be repaid. The first repayment was made in July of 2014. It included almost $10 million of principal and then a large amount of interest of $51 million. At that time, the future repayments were canceled, but we also transferred $63 million back to the general fund from that fund. And then in November of 2015, the $63 million was transferred back to Closed Landfill Investment Fund. The fund, I'm not sure on the exact interest earnings the last year, but it has about $65 million in it for use at those facilities after year 2020. Underneath that, you'll see the federal fund. The agencies receive some federal funds as grants or work agreements. These are ones that actually flow through the state. I know the state and different groups within the state receive other federal funds, but these are the ones that actually get spent by the agencies or flow through the state at Treasury. And that's about, with the agencies that fall in this jurisdiction, is about $40 million last year. The Special Revenue Fund is used for a variety of purposes. A lot of times it'll be like the work agreements with agencies. There are some fees collected and things like that, but a lot of times it'll be work agreements and such. Example two, a large portion of that would be like the Minnesota Zoo. It's their revenue falls in the Special Revenue Fund. I want to say it's like $25 million a year or something like that. So that would show up in that $100 million number. There's sometimes you'll see these numbers reported differently. The agencies do their own internal billing sometimes for their administrative support costs, so that number looks a lot larger sometimes. Under that, you see the gift fund. Basically, for this committee's jurisdiction, the DNR and the zoo can receive gifts through this fund. I think a lot of times it's probably like donation of property, or maybe it can be money. I'm assuming the zoo receives more money and the DNR receives more land as gifts, but that's about $4 million per year. Under that's the Reinvest in Minnesota, the RIM fund. That would be the sale of the critical habitat license plates, and it's about $4.6 million. And the last fund you see on here is the permanent school fund. There's a large corpus to the fund, and then the interest earnings on the fund are used to fund the education departments or the K-12 education program, about $28 million per year. I think it equates to like $27 or $28 per student, which is not necessarily into our committee's jurisdiction, but the revenues into the fund do fall in this committee's jurisdiction. It's primarily from timber harvest and mining royalties on school trust lands. In 2016, it was $29.9 million of net revenues going into the fund. We do make a few direct appropriations in the account that the money sits in prior to it going into the fund, like $200,000 per year for the DNR to make land exchanges, $200,000 per year for the school trust lands director and permanent school fund commission, and then $300,000 per year for the school trust lands director to accelerate land exchanges leasing opportunities. And the DNR is also able to recover the costs that they have for managing these lands. They just manage them, same with the state forest or whatever property is around it. And the revenue from the timber or the mining is on there as well. But the agency has their costs for putting the timber for sale or managing the timber, things like that. I just have the one number on here. But in 2016, the certified cost going to the Natural Resources Fund, the Forest Management Investment Account, was $7.2 million. And there's a little bit of certified costs that also go to the general fund. I want to say it was like $1.5 million last year. And that is all I have for the overview, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. Just on that third page at the very end, the very last sentence, the last point you made about the $7.2 million, you know, there's been a lot of discussions here in this body in the last number of years, spearheaded by several different people. At some point, could you gather some information for us that shows us how that number has changed, that $7.2 million over the years, you know, what the agency was charging against the school trust fund? And it would be nice to have that.
Mr. Chair, I can do that. I pulled the numbers kind of preliminarily together last night, but I'd like to verify them against something else before I distribute them.
Thank you. And then up at the top of that page under the remediation fund, about the last sentence before the italicized, the departmental revenue into the fund in 2016. Can you explain how the department puts revenue into that fund, that $2.5
million? Under the remediation fund, Mr. Chair?
Yes, I'm sorry.
I don't know offhand. It's some of the permits they charge, I believe. I don't know exactly what the revenues are, but I can find those for you.
Thank you. Other questions or comments? Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Speaking a little further on this permanent school trust fund, it probably would be helpful if both the Mining and Forestry Tourism Committee and this committee received a brief that demonstrates how much school trust land right now is generating zero revenue for the trust fund that is under DNR management. And I'll give you an example. A huge number of public accesses that the DNR manages are on school trust land. That's just the tip of the iceberg. But sometime here over the next month or two, I think it would be very educational. There's a lot of work to be done to shift a lot of land that is producing zero revenue for our kids into a more revenue-producing situation. It's been going on for 50 to 100 years, so it's not a new problem.
Thank you, Representative Lewick. And knowing you like I do, I think you may have a solution. Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had two questions that I'd like to get some clarification on. The first one goes to the Natural Resources Fund. The last category, the Natural Resources Dedicated. There was some commentary. So there was about 10 to 15 additional accounts that you had, described as being minor expenditures. Is there more information you can get? Can we get a breakdown on that? I mean, I don't need it right this minute, but if we could get that information sometime, it would be nice to know what those numbers are and where those funds are going. If we have 10 to 15 line items, just an email or just if you could print something off at one of the meetings coming up, that would be great. I'd like a little more detail on those. That's number one.
If we can address that issue first.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Representative Neuberger, I can tell you that we do plan a deeper dive into these things. I asked Mr. Hagemeyer to give us kind of that 50,000-foot look at things right now, a very brief overview. But, you know, I'm sure that Mr. Hagemeyer would be happy to sit down with you and answer some of those questions. And if we think that you want to bring it to the entire committee, we can do that as well. Mr. Hagemeyer.
Mr. Chair, yeah. Yeah, there are a number of accounts. I actually would have to look at the statutory creation of all these accounts. Some of them might just be the agency, how they act with them. But they're pretty minor. They're all statutorily appropriated as far as I know. There's, just for example, there would be like the mineral water permitting account, which has maybe $50,000 a year in revenue. There was underground gas storage account, which has gas storage fees, and again, it's about $60,000 a year. There's the forest burn account, like fire burning permits on, and that's, again, about $70,000 a year. They're pretty small, and they're just statutorily appropriated for those purposes. But I can sit down with you and provide those, or I can provide them in an email and work with the agency to make sure they're actually statutorily created and not just agency operations.
Thank you. Representative Newbern.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And then also, yeah, I will follow up with you. I just like to get a breakdown of what those are and how much those are for each one. And then also, looking here at the environmental fund, you have at the bottom of the page, you have mostly PCA. Your wording here, you have major funding source with PCA operations and for the remediation fund for site cleanup costs. If you flip the page, the last couple of lines here, you have fines and penalties, $1.6 million. Those fines and penalties, Mr. Hagemeyer, if you're able to elaborate on that, what's the time frame on those fines and penalties? And I would also like to get some information on who these where these fine monies are coming from, who's paying these fine monies, I would also like to know what percentage of the overall budget is coming from these fines and penalties. I know that we're taking a 50,000-foot look at things today, but I would appreciate a little more detail on this category here.
Mr. Chair, I have pulled those kind of numbers together for a little history too. I'd like to verify them as well. It's kind of consistently between $1 million and $1.5 million into the environmental fund. The actual individuals that are being fined, I don't know. I'd have to ask the agency, or they can respond to that when they are here at some point. I don't know. That's an annual number though, the $1.5 million or $1.6 million.
Thank you.
Representative Neuberger, I know that MPC is here today, so they've probably heard your request. I'm sure they'll have that information for you.
I appreciate that.
Anybody else? Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we are diving deeper, I hope we can dive a little bit deeper into the landfill program, particularly the one that is not in the program yet, because it's going to cause us some problems. That's a freeway landfill.
Sure. Representative Hans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe this is a jurisdiction. I know we've created the Aquatic Invasives Research Institute at the U and the Terrestrial Invasives, and I think there's been lottery money and mixes of money. So appropriations are, whether they're an LCCMR or if there was general fund, would those come through this committee?
I mean, Representative Hansen, I would certainly think so. I mean, LCCMR, we have that. That'll come through this committee. So I don't know why it wouldn't.
Maybe I was, to be a little clearer, maybe if we wanted to supplement that.
Oh.
I was just thinking, you know, aquatic invasive species continues. I certainly hear about it in my district, and I bet everybody hears about it. So if there was more that could be done to kind of prevent the spread of certain ones, and particularly with starry stonewort. And then on the terrestrial invasives, I think that also with the Palmer amaranth issue. So The LCCMR is one thing, but we may have to look at how we're doing that overall to try to impact protecting both air and the, or the land and the water.
Yeah, and I think that to that point, Representative Hansen, I think the U has been pretty intimately involved here in the last number of years with a whole host of issues, and working both with this committee and with Chair Hamilton's Committee on Agriculture, and I think most people see it as a priority. It's interesting, I was at the same roundtable that you were last Friday, and the featured speaker during her presentation said that every plant and every animal on this planet has a purpose. And I leaned over to the person sitting next to me, and I said, even stony, starry stonewort and mussels? So, we'll see. Anything else from the committee members? Thank you, Mr. Hagemeyer. We'll look forward to a deeper dive into the budgets for all the agencies that we are charged with overseeing. It's one of my goals is to try to bring more transparency and to the way we go about budgeting and spending and revenues and all that sort of stuff. And I hope that all of you will join me in that mission. We did have a few people that I'm sure were stuck in traffic or whatnot today. So, Representative Clark, would you take a moment to introduce yourself for us, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Karen Clark from South Minneapolis, four neighborhoods, inner city South Minneapolis. Really happy to be on this committee again. Look forward to working with you, Mr. Chairman.
And I with you, too. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jason Metza from up in Virginia, the east half of the Iron Range. Glad to be on the committee. I've gotten lots of briefs from Mr. Strohmeyer here over the years on what goes on in this committee, and it'll be nice to work hands-on with all of you. So, looking forward to it.
Thank you. I won't tell the committee at this point what conversation you and I had. I believe it was Friday evening on my way home, but I'm going to hold you to that. So, just so you know. By the way, committee, you should know that Representative Metz and his wife are expecting their firstborn in February. So. All right. You make some grandparents very happy, I can tell you that. Representative Wagenius, would you speak into that? There you go. Yep.
Jean Wagenius from representing part of South Minneapolis, all the way to the south around the airport and part of Richfield. And, Mr. Chairman, you're very right. I had the most interesting commute this morning.
Representative Ugel, would you like to share your commute story with us, too?
Only 2 hours plus, Mr. Chair.
Oh, goodness. Yeah.
Representative Mark Ugel, representing Champlin and part of Coon Rapids. This will be my third term on this committee. Always have a great time working with everybody here on the committee. I think it's a great group of people and look forward to getting some meaningful legislation done.
And thank you. And just so that you know, that we've got a couple of outstanding snowmobile manufacturers up in District 1A. If you need a snowmobile to get to work, I'm sure that you can arrange that. And don't say that's the wrong color. The one that you've got is the wrong color. So.
Uh-oh. It's the wrong color.
What is it, yellow?
It's yellow.
Just a couple other things here real quickly. I do want to kind of circle back with the entire group. If there are some issues that are kind of burning issues in your district, the things that you've been hearing about, again, I'd like to kind of go around the table again and see what issues you heard about last weekend when you were home and during the campaign and in the time between the election and the start of the legislative session. So we'll start with Representative Bliss.
Well, my district encompasses the Leech Lake Indian Reservation, which has the Leech Lake Reservoir and the Cass Lake chain of lakes, so invasive species was big on the agenda. Also, I don't know if it'll be going through this committee or not, but the Line 3 for Enbridge, the replacement and abandonment of that line was a big issue that I'd like to hear about more.
Thank you.
Again, Jamie Becker Finn. I'm one of the suburban members, but I have 14 lakes in my district. So water quality, anything lake related, have a lot of homeowners who live on the lakes and use them. So I get a lot of feedback about water quality issues for the most part.
Representative Eklund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, having both Voyageurs National Park and the Boundary Waters Canoe Area in my district, invasive species are a hot topic. And then another one that we need to get a handle on is some of the new rules surrounding demolition landfills. There's some real concerns in some of the counties on what's going to happen with them, and if we got to start hauling our demolition to other parts of the state, it's going to become extremely costly for the counties. So, thank you.
I have that on my list too, Representative Eklund. Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've got a number of issues in my district. Pipeline Line 3 replacement going through there. I deal with some of those delicate issues with the Fond du Lac tribe that's in my district. But front and center right now is a Superfund site right in the city of Cloquet that has got my attention, and I'll thank the MPCA for their help in educating me on how to deal with that.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
I guess I'd comment on the water quality as it relates to agriculture, and I think I can bring some good news. I'm seeing in multiple watersheds landowners working together with some assistance from various angles to really make some progress in improving water quality and dealing with erosion and a whole bunch of issues. I think the compelling question for this committee is how do we energize that to speed that along and to help them do their jobs. There's a group called the Minnesota River Congress, which is a group of citizens up and down the Minnesota River, which have been active and really are kind of bringing some policy work into this set of issues. And then finally, I'll just mention, again, the terrestrial invasive species issue is very real for the corn and bean farmers in my part of the state. Thank you.
Isn't it interesting on the terrestrial invasives where we get the Palmer amaranth that comes in and some of the seed mixtures that were brought here to help out a problem and it created one? Representative Hansen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I was thinking back to when we actually had passed a law to say that you had to use local seed for new seed mixes, but that got repealed. And that would have prevented the Palmer amaranth problem. But one thing I didn't hear, and I saw Representative Torkelson smiling, during my campaigning, I never heard anybody ask me about the balsam boa count. That I didn't get any questions about that during the campaign. But I did get questions, and I was thinking about, you mentioned about a bug in our office. And I think both you and I have a bug in our office, and that's a vial with an emerald ash borer in that vial. And I think there's several members that have. How many people have the emerald ash borer bug in their office? So, you lost your. Was it alive? But
we'll work through the chair here in this committee, folks. Okay,
Mr. Chair, I think that emerald ash borer and the terrestrial invasives as well as the aquatic are really important. If we think of them as biological contamination. You know, we talk a lot about chemical contamination of water, but if we have biological contamination that spreads both on land and water, it's impacting both tourism and our economy. So I hope we can work together on those issues.
And we have the tamarack larch in my district. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you won't be surprised by this because I've raised this in the committee before, but I continually hear about concerns around climate change, climate mitigation in my district. But I did want to also share with the committee a story about some outdoor recreation I did during the interim, which was quite silly and maybe frightening. But a friend of mine from Israel came to visit, and he's very involved in issues around water quality on the Jordan River. You may know that the River Jordan is holy to three faiths, and they have a lot of issues and concerns. And I said, well, what do you want to do while you're here? He goes, well, I want to meet with some people and check out some issues around the Mississippi River. So I called a friend of mine who's involved in Friends of the Mississippi, and we were going to get together for a meeting. He goes, well, why don't we canoe the river? He'll get a good sense of that. And so I thought, okay, as long as I'm not in the stern, because I don't want to steer right into a barge. And we did set out on a peaceful Sunday morning in fall and canoed from near Fort Snelling all the way to Harriet Island. And there is a part where Minnesota comes together with the Mississippi. And when you're canoeing that stretch, you really see the difference in water color when the Minnesota comes in. And, of course, there's a lot of silt and other nutrients and whatnot that come in from the Minnesota into the Mississippi, which is not especially clean at that point, but cleaner than the Minnesota. So I'm very concerned as a result of that experience and issues around water quality in the Mississippi River and a whole set of issues around protecting the river as it comes through the national park here in the metro area, which is 70 miles so near, not too far from Representative Newberger's district, all the way down to Representative Hansen's district. So the river now has become a concern of mine as a result of that experience.
Thank you.
And I didn't steer into a barge.
Okay, good. And you were steering right, too.
Exactly.
And I would also share a story about a river and north of my little hunting shack that I have out in the woods in north of Grigla. And Moose River runs from the east to the west. And the weekend before deer hunting season, I took a hike up one of the ditch dump roads, we call them up there, section line. And it was created 80 years ago when they made a ditch and drained a significant amount of farmland through there. But there's a mile and a half of WMA on either side of this ditch. And when I got to Moose River, it's a mile and a half hike from the gate. I stood on a culvert where the snowmobile trail goes over the top of the ditch, and they put a culvert in so snowmobiles can go there in the wintertime. And I noticed that the water going into Moose River, a little stream, was much cleaner than the water that was flowing in Moose River. And a lot of that has to do with just with stream bank erosion, the soil types, and that sort of stuff. And it's interesting that at the point where I was standing, the water coming from the east had traveled through a mile of state land on either side, and it was filled with sediment. So that's my little river story. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Of course, water issues are key up in our area with White Bear Lake as to what's happening in water use and sustainability. And big one I hear a lot on is figuring out different ways for water reuse, et cetera, and things that we can find in that area.
So I was curious, Representative Fisher, so I was looking online at the water levels, and I know 2 years ago we thought that White Bear Lake was going to look like Devil's Lake did in 1952 or whatever. And now I noticed it's back up significantly.
It's back up significantly. We've been fortunate that we've had record rains this past couple of years. The problem is that in the past when we had normal rains, that would keep the lake at normal levels, and it seems the only way we can, and we're not up to the normal level yet, even with record rains, but if we have normal rains, it will not keep it at normal levels anymore. There has been a change since 2003.
So have you been praying for rain, or?
Well, I hate to say it, but I have been doing some rain dances to increase that possibility.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's probably two major issues, and I was called to a meeting just about a week and a half ago in my own neighborhood to talk about issues that probably come under the topic of environmental justice or environmental injustice, which is basically the way we talk about it is the disproportionate impact of environmental toxic exposure on low-income communities and communities of color. And that happens to be my district. I'm very honored to have that kind of a district. The two areas have to do with air pollution. We've had some success in working with MPCA to measure the air pollution in our community. And the part of the neighborhood I live in has some real serious issues. I guess a story I could tell you is that I grew up on a farm, and I used to like to hang my clothes outside even in the city. I had to stop doing that because they started smelling like asphalt because of the air pollution. It's gotten better, but it's still a problem, and there's another industry just about a block and a half from me. So the air pollution is one thing. The other one is water. And in my district, it's not rivers flowing through it. It's the water that's coming out of our tap. And the issue of childhood lead poisoning continues to be an issue, one that I've tried to explore with some legislation.
Thank you. Representative Hetzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I know we briefly spoke on the phone about a few things. We'll keep that
briefly
top secret. Well, briefly about what, an hour of your drive?
One sixth.
Yeah, and so I was wondering, first off, can I get my office bugged too? That sounds really fun. and I must have missed the previous committee when the Emerald Ashport was given out. I'm guessing Bob up there has probably a few vials of those left, so if you wouldn't mind, Bob, I'd love one. But a couple small things I really think can, we could work on. Snowmobile groomer trails, a lot of the equipment in my district's getting old, rickety, and it's at the point where I believe a lot of these groups can trade in their equipment and get it to someone else who can use it. It was a bill we submitted at the end of last year, but it's probably the number one like local trail issue I've heard. And so I'd like to work on that with the committee this year and make sure our trails are ready to generate revenue from all the people willing to come in from out of state and spend money enjoying our great outdoors. And I represent the most mining-centric district in the country, so there are lots of issues aside from that that we'll be working on.
I was there a few weeks ago. That was pretty cool, traveling through the Mintak mine. That was unbelievable what they do. And the trail issue is important in my district, too, and I'm kind of happy to report that after a year of wrangling with one of my favorite agencies, we now have finally put some processes in place that allow some volunteers to groom the snowmobile trails, or excuse me, the cross-country ski trails in three of the parks that that I have. But I do have a question for DNR. I'll be asking them. At the Hayes Lake State Park, they used to have a snowmobile there, and now it's been taken away. And you know, we've got 2 feet of snow on the ground, and if you're the park manager and you need to go and check something out on the other side of the park, a mile and a half away, if your time is of value, it would seem to me that we probably should have a snowmobile in Hayes Lake State Park. I'm just saying.
And Mr. Chair, on that note, if you did want to release me from committee to give a ride, I'd be happy to take a sled up there and get into the other end of the park.
Well, thanks for volunteering. I'm sure I'll have plenty of volunteers for that. Other side, Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My constituents in Minneapolis are among the million Minnesotans who drink Mississippi River water. And we have no source water protection plan in Minnesota that's workable for the Mississippi. So that's a real problem. The second thing I'll bring up is more of a fun problem. I know you all know from the state demographer that Minnesota in general is losing its youngest population, you know, the 20-somethings, et cetera. We're losing it. The exception to that rule is in Minneapolis. And so the young generation in Minneapolis doesn't want cars. And because they don't want cars, they use bikes. And so we have a really good bike system in Minneapolis. The problem is that those folks can't get out of the metro, the tight metro, into the DNR Parks and Trails system. And while I hear a lot about young folks not wanting to participate in the outdoors, I don't believe that at all. They want to participate, but they can't get out. So I am very interested in our folks being able to get out on trails. Now there's a line from Lake Nokomis, which I represent, all the way down to the Bloomington Ferry Bridge, a bike trail down there. But my folks can't get to Representative Torkelson's district on a bike trail, which I think would be great for both my constituents and all those communities along the Minnesota River. So that's one of the things I'm very interested in.
Thank you. Representative Ublum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, yes, I'm... Yes, some of my issues are the invasive species, and they have been over the years. We've done a great job, I think, protecting the Mississippi River with our work so far, but the St. Croix River is pretty vulnerable right now, and that's a great recreational resource. And we're probably not taking care of that with regard to the Asian carp situation and some of the other things, and invasives in the lakes and the water quality of lakes in Minnesota. Minnesota's a land of 10,000 lakes, and we've got some beauties. We've also got some that aren't so good, and I think we need to continue to work forward to ensuring that there is continued improvement there. And also the pipelines. I think most of us drove here today, or I know Frank took the light rail.
Right.
But
no problems with traffic for me.
Yeah, you beat me here, too, yeah.
Okay, we'll work through the chair here, members. Okay,
sorry.
That's two.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
But we need to ensure that that we have adequate resources there, too, and do these things in a proper environmental manner, but also deliver the material that a modern society needs, and that's oil. So those are issues that concern me the most.
Thank you, and I know that you spend a fair amount of time on Leech Lake, and late this fall we've discovered that there is a new invasive there. So
just a side point on that, it's interesting that the zebra mussels were not found at the main landing, which is checked in Walker quite a bit. They were found up in Portage Bay and also in Cabacona Bay, two landings that are infrequently checked.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a long list of complaints from my area. One of the biggest ones is the lack of land management on state lands, the weed control problem that we have up there. There's a lot of anger over the buffer language and what Bowser's doing there. That has to be addressed almost immediately. That's really affecting us up there. And then the last one I'll mention, even though there's more, we're having a lot more problems with permitting, some through the DNR, but mostly through the MPCA. A lot of problems there. A lot of angst over the rulemaking authority that the agencies have that are putting great strain on not just businesses but private folks in my area.
And to that point, Representative Green, I'll also say it's our local government units, too. It's our counties and townships and so forth who are really struggling with permitting and, you know, all the regulations. You're absolutely right. We do plan to take a hard look at that for sure. Thank you. And I might say, too, on the buffers, you know, we are trying to arrange for some sort of a hearing, a joint hearing with Ag. The smart people here are working on that. To try and pull that together. I mean, just in Roseau County, in my home county, we have 800 miles of public ditches. Folks, this isn't manageable, what we're doing. We need to figure this out and get it straightened out so that people can actually do the things that a lot of them would like to do. And Representative Johnson, to your point about how it's going in your district and the progress that's being made, I would state strongly. In fact, Jeff Broberg said it at the DNR roundtable in January of 15, when the governor unveiled his plan or the idea of the buffers. He stood up at that meeting and said, you know, we've already got things going pretty well in the area that he represents in his county. But they've done it with a thermos of coffee and a mug, and they go out and they visit with local landowners and so forth and say, hey, how can we partner in this? What can we do working together to accomplish some of these goals? And I think that carrot works a lot better than what a lot of people are perceiving as a stick. I hope that we can work through this. So, Representative Neuberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I think the biggest issues that I would like to address and then also see us work on as a committee, many of them I can echo here have already been stated. But specifically some forest management issues. Also, I can remember fondly Representative Dill would sit right here, and he'd always have his big cup of McDonald's tea or whatever it was he was slurping on, and he was always a strong advocate for land acquisition reform. He was always talking about the amount of land that was owned by the state or the federal government. It is true, to my knowledge, that the state of Minnesota is the third largest landowner in the U.S. landowner
next to the state of Alaska and the federal government. I think that looking at land acquisition reform would be a good thing for us to pursue. Also, after I get my glasses on here, I'd like to really see this committee work on improving the relationship dynamics between government, state agencies, and citizens. I think there's a lot of area for improvement, and I really look forward to improving those relationship dynamics so that we can serve this state better. And then more specifically, looking at the zebra mussels, I know that folks had talked about that. I know that that's an issue, and I look forward to exploring ways to control the zebra mussel problem.
Thank you. Representative Becker.
Thank you, Chair. Number one, I go to senior citizens events, and buffers are brought up in my district. I can't, on the way in yesterday, two calls on the buffer. So that's number one. We need some practical approaches. People need to understand that farmers want to invest into their land, just like up in mining. You know, we harvest the top where we're at. Mining, we harvest in the earth. So farmers are good stewards, and I think that's one of the challenges that we constantly hear is that people think that farmers are not the good stewards. They are the best stewards of our land. So buffers. Number two is drainage ditch in a district that's 105 townships outside of ag area. I have a lot of county roads and a lot of drainage ditch, and there is some practical ways to solve that problem that would cost the state $0. I introduced a bill last year. We'll be introducing that again. On this new so-called MnDOT mowing of ditches is also unpractical and uncommon sense. That is, there's no way that MnDOT can go and take care of all the ditches. We need to partner and with the landowners, and then to name the state of Minnesota as a lost payee on their insurance is just unpractical. Permitting issues, there's a large list there. Water treatment plants, I represent 42 towns, so water treatment plants issues, we started to address that last year. And unfortunately, the number one issue in my district is lack of trust. My people do not trust the state agencies, and it has gotten worse over the last 2 years. And I have tried to foster that. I have worked with people, DNR, MPC, and other agencies, and that relationship over the last 2 years have gone downhill, not just landowners, but cities, counties, and so forth. And we have to foster that. We need to be Minnesotans and partner together. So I'm just getting started, but I will just stop there.
Thank you, Representative Becker. And to that point, I would say, too, I've talked, some people would say almost endlessly, and I've probably bored a lot of you to death, but I hear that almost every day in my district, too, that the state is not seen as a partner in people's daily lives. Too frequently, rather than partnering with people, we're punishing people. And we need to break that down, and we need to restore some common sense, some cups of coffee, and communications with local people so that we can restore some of that trust again. It's really a sad situation that we have deteriorated to that point, that there is just this almost genetic distrust and dislike for state agencies in the part of the state that I represent. And to your point on, members, if you haven't read the DOT's permitting requirements, it's the haying and mowing permit number 1750. I know that you all know what The Onion is, that newspaper, that satirical newspaper, that humorous one down here. When I first read this, honest to goodness, I thought that I was reading The Onion under the rules. I mean, can you imagine that you're going to ask a farmer to wear a helmet when he's mowing in the ditch? As a northern Minnesota guy there, you know, you're going to be in the cab of your tractor and you're going to be required to wear a high-visibility green vest, and the state is going to tell you where you can and cannot enter the right-of-way. And, I mean, it just goes on and on. So take a look at that and see what you think. So... where are we at? Representative Lewick, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. probably one of the things ready to top the list is our great walleye fishery on Mille Lacs Lake, and I say that in all seriousness. The fish are biting hot right now. You can keep one, and we have ice. But that's a long-term management situation with the DNR. Mille Lacs Band obviously sits right there at the lake. In fact, one of the three legislative districts that makes up the Mille Lacs Band is totally inside of District 10B. And then we've got Glyphwick, which is the rest of the bands all the way through Wisconsin to Lake Michigan that have got a say in what we do there. So we're making some progress. Lots of fish being caught there right now. Line 3 is a huge deal in my area. I've got three school districts that are patiently waiting for that new property tax revenue, the accrue, if we just get off the dime and get that in place, as well as a number of townships in the county. A pump station, new jobs, permanent jobs for an area that really needs them. I watch closely and occasionally get a little frustrated with the way some of the mineral leasing issues, primarily on the federal side. My district has got copper, nickel, manganese. We already gave up all the really high-grade iron ore. We've got peat, all of that stuff on state lands are mineral reserves that go through the leasing process. In general, the DNR has done a pretty good job on that. Just want to make sure we're able to keep that up and straighten some things out with the federal government. Wetland mitigation is huge. Aiken County's got greater than 90% of pre-European wetlands, and we continue to try to make more. And I say this in all deadly seriousness. If we keep it up, we're going to have more wetland there than prior to pre-European settlement. It's just about a decade away if we keep going at the pace we're doing. That just doesn't pass the sanity test. It really is tough on economic development. And I see my good friend across the table there didn't mention beavers, trapping. A lot of people, everybody's got their own opinion on the importance of trapping in Minnesota. It's important where I live, particularly for beaver removal and other things. And we've got, we sit at the epicenter of the wolf livestock clash. We get tired of feeding prime rib to our four-legged friends. So with that, and by the way, I've only got 600 miles of public ditches in Aiken County, so you've got a couple hundred miles more. The buffer thing is not playing well where I live. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And to your point on the mining, members, I appreciate the discussion that we have with regards to mining and all types of it. Just across the border from me, near Bedette, Minnesota, there's a new mine going in. Yep. In the heart of the Rainy River Watershed District. It's a gold and silver precious metal mine. That mine, the general manager at the co-op in Bedette told me that they've hired about 10 new people to service that account across the border into Canada. They're running three or four semis a day with diesel fuel, propane, and gasoline up there to service that account, and it's worth about $20 million to their business. If you go online and look and just Google search Ontario mining and stuff, there's 40 different mines that are active in Ontario at this time in all different kinds of watersheds, and they're mining everything from Ms. Zipko saw this one, I showed it to her, and they're even mining diamonds in Ontario. So you want a little bling, Representative Hornstein? Okay. So anyway, who we got here?
In my district, one of the issues that we have, in fact, I got emails on it this week, is the buffers. It's an issue that we do have to deal with, figure out what to do, how to do it, and how to do it properly and economically, working with the ag industry and keeping our watershed clean. It can be done. The farmers want to do what's best for their area. They're the best stewards of the land. Another issue that I run across and I hear it weekly in my area is the lack of respect DNR
has towards the people in the community. They don't listen to the people. They don't even have town halls anymore. They call it something else, but they don't listen to the people. And until that changes, the community, my community, is going to have a lot of angst towards DNR. And that's something that we need to work on.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Lehman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I started a list. I've had time as we go around the room, and I'm just wondering what's not on my list.
Just so you know, we do at 10 o'clock.
Okay. well, I'm from Itasca County, and we have over 1,000 of the 10,000 lakes. And so, obviously, water quality and invasive species issues are a grave concern. And we've done some really good things in Itasca County with some legacy money. It's really made an impact on monitoring and controlling the public accesses. So that's a good thing. Representative Lewick referred to the school trust fund lands. That's of interest to me. And there's some lands that are not productive, some within the BWCA that need to be exchanged. I know that's been an issue that's been worked on for a long time. Itasca County has about 60% of its land under public control. Only about 40% is available for development. And so when you talk to folks in Itasca County, and it's the same with Cass County, their biggest concern is property tax revenue. And so they need to maximize the property that they do have. And even with conservation easements, looking at what the impact is there, a payment in lieu of taxes is something that's always of concern. And then finally, this is probably one of the things that brought me to this seat is really looking at a good balance of environment with responsible development. I think we've tilted a little bit out of balance. And on the Iron Range, we have some of the mining industries coming back online now. But it's not like it used to be. It's very tenuous. And we need to look at those industries and their history, their 100-year history on the Iron Range, and their future. I think it's in all of Minnesota's interest to continue our natural resource-based industries for as long as we can. These are the highest-paying jobs in Minnesota, and the ancillary jobs that come with that are really what allows people to live in greater Minnesota, allows people to live in northern Minnesota. So that's of interest. The pipeline runs right through Itasca County. It's been a great benefit. Communities like Deer River have seen significant property tax relief as a result of the pipeline. I door knocked people in Cass County where a pipeline was going to go through Sandpiper. Is not going through now, and they're going to miss that property tax, and they do miss that. And so those are just some of the issues. This is out of the purview of this committee, but yesterday we got news that PolyMet learned that the federal land exchange went through. That was of interest to me, just because the time it takes to work with government on land exchanges, whether it's state or federal. I was commissioner of the IRRRB years ago, and my last act as commissioner was to make a loan to PolyMet to buy some of the land that they could use to exchange with the federal government. Well, since I left as commissioner, they've repaid the loan, and finally, all these years later, the land exchange has gone through. And so that was cool to see that happen, finally, eventually. But those are some of the issues in, I say I'm from northern Minnesota. We're going to have a discussion about that.
Uh-oh. I'm willing to listen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Obviously, a lot of the members from rural Minnesota have stated a lot of the issues are the same, but I will state them myself as well. The buffer legislation is definitely, first and foremost, frustration with the state. Really that feeling, I think, really an anger towards state agencies and the decisions that they're making ad hoc. Now with the mowing legislation for ditches.
The rule, sorry.
They treat it like legislation. Anyway, really, of all the issues, I mean, I really feel, I mean, even myself, you know, my great-grandfather worked very hard for this, to get farmers to sell easements and the ability to build state roads through rural Minnesota. He went out and visited with his neighbors and asked them, hey, this is going to improve our area. But if I can just think of him 80 years ago going to those neighbors and saying, now you have to make sure you wear a, you know, leather football helmet when you're riding the horse, trying to, you know, rake those ditches. All those years ago, they'd have told him, go fly a kite. And of all the things that probably kept me up last night, because I had a late-night phone call from a constituent, just irate about it, and it literally cost me about an hour and a half of sleep after midnight because I was so pissed off about it.
Well, you look refreshed.
Yeah, I do, yeah. It's my youthful good looks. You know, I think that's the biggest issue we have when we talk about this rural metro divide is people really look at downtown St. Paul as there's a lot of decisions come out that have nothing to do with their way of life. And that's one, sorry. Just in general, department overreach and rulemaking when it comes to a myriad of issues, mining included, ditch mowing, water treatment plant regulation when it comes to other small cities and towns. I mean, we've got a lot of small cities that are facing Madison, Minnesota, looking at MPCA rules that may very detrimentally look at what they can do as far as, you know, from a cost perspective for a very few amount of people. You know, DNR opening up state lands to grazing. The federal government has this figured out pretty very well, but yet we have still some DNR areas that are not doing really a fair shake when it comes to open up those lands to really partner with agriculture. And just land acquisition. I can't tell you how many young farmers my age and younger who are really trying to get back into the business that maybe their dad or grandpa rented a piece of ground, a pasture, for many, many years. Well, the time came for that other family to sell. And, you know, they were looking just to try to maintain their operation so they could potentially grow and pass it to the next generation. And they lost the option because there was a partner of the state bought the land from out underneath them. And, you know, those things are frustrating because we talk about young people. We talk about Representative Clark talked about how young people, you know, in Minneapolis, that's a great place for them to stay. That's the only place that young people are staying. Well, I can tell you they can't stay in a district like mine because the state's coming in and buying operations out from underneath them. And, you know, that's a frustrating thing to see, too. And so whether it be mining in northern Minnesota, whether it be agriculture in southern Minnesota, whether it be manufacturing, you know, we have a job to do. And, you know, as legislators, we are responsible to the people that elected us. And I think the frustration that people are feeling, whether it be regulation or rulemaking, those folks aren't necessarily elected by the people. And it's our job, if the voters can't hold them elected, and the voters can't elect them and hold them accountable, then it's our job to do it. And we all want to be responsible to the environment. We all want to be responsible. But the most important thing is we need to be responsible to our constituents and keeping jobs here in Minnesota, especially in rural parts of our state where we obviously are sometimes losing out. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Swedzinski. And I will reemphasize what you said about the acquisitions. And for folks that don't live where we live and you don't spend time in Kitson County and Roseau County and Marshall County and places like that, this is one of, if not the largest, issues that I face on a daily basis. And what's really heartbreaking for a lot of people is they may have a small ranching operation going, and you've got kind of a young family, and maybe there's a son or a daughter who's expressed an interest in getting involved in the ranching or the small grain farming or something. And they would like to expand it to maybe have a second family become a part of that operation. And when there's a piece of property that comes up for sale oftentimes, it's really hard to bid against, you know, the state and the NGU, you know, NGUs and stuff that are interested in acquiring that property when there's literally tens of thousands of acres all around them, and they can't bid against them because they just can't quite. And I understand, too, that if Representative Metza, you know, the landowner, wants to sell his land to the highest bidder, I get that as well. So we need to work through this stuff, and we need some more local control over some of this stuff. And And that's something that I'm very interested in working on, is trying to preserve our way of life so that we can keep young people up there. I went to the high school graduation in Badger High School a couple of years ago and met with the superintendent. They had 16 kids graduate from Badger High School. Nothing I would like more than to have all of them come back to Northwest Minnesota and get a job at wherever and live there. Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'd just like to echo that. You know, I'm a metro legislator, but I spend a lot of time up in northern Minnesota. And we hear all of our colleagues talk about this, but it is real, because I have coffee at the local cafe in Walker, and I hear this. So, you know, many times I'm torn, but I do know that what you have all expressed is a real concern up in northern Minnesota. And looking at it from the metro perspective versus the rural perspective is sometimes tough, but it's very, very real out there.
Thank you. And I've asked this many times in committee. You know, we've heard how much of the different counties and representative districts and so forth are controlled by, you know, a government unit of some sort. And it's, in my district, it's 40%, and some others it's 70%, and some others it's 80% or 90%. Folks, seriously, how much of us do you want? Give me a number. What percentage of the land mass in District 1A do you want? And tell me. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really don't know where to start, to tell you the truth.
Pick a spot.
Well, you know, in general terms, the arbitrary nature of the way our state agencies enforce either regulation or rules in our parts of the state is alarming, whether it be the right now we're in a big battle at Fort Ridgely State Park over a golf course. And, you know, there's good arguments on both sides, but what's really wrong is that they don't approach the local people that are interested first. They come to them last and say, this is what we're going to do. It's really a shame, because if this state is going to work well, we need its citizens to be involved in the way our state agencies approach the work that they do with our citizens. It's been covered by many of my colleagues here. Of course, I've been hearing a lot about buffers, and I have pledged to do what I can to improve that situation, make it workable and practical, and at the same time, I'm very interested in water quality and what we can do in the agriculture industry to improve water quality in a way that makes good common sense. On a lighter note, first on a heavy note, we had record amounts of rainfall in my part of the state this last growing season and last year. It causes a tremendous amount of hardship for agricultural producers. We work twice as hard to get a crop in, get a crop out when we're battling with excessive moisture. It highlights how important agricultural drainage is to the agricultural industry, whether it be tile drainage or surface drainage. We wouldn't be able to farm this land if we can't control the amount of water, just like folks here in the Twin Cities wouldn't be able to drive down the freeway if they couldn't control the amount of water is, you know, in their neighborhood. You know, it's drained off, so the road stays clear of water because you can't drive through a lake. Likewise, I can't farm through a lake either. So practical approach there. But along those lines of excessive rainfall, I'm sure Frank would think that it has something to do with a changing climate, but I have discovered the truth, Frank. It's Peter Fisher's fault. Peter Fisher has not only been praying for rain, he's been dancing for rain. And Peter, I want to tell you right now, enough.
Ms. Schroeder, would you make sure that that's reflected in the minutes, please? Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll start on a positive note. And some may argue that their districts reflect this demographic, but I really think that Crow Wing County, the very center of the state of Minnesota, in fact, Crow Wing is further from the border than any other county regionally. is the most recreationally diverse county in the entire state. We have everything in Crow Wing County. And the positive note would be that if you look at the many, many, many lakes in my district, in the last 10 years, most of them have improving water quality. And that's for a lot of reasons. And some of the things that we have done with watershed districts and lake associations and all the efforts have had a positive impact. On the downside of that, I'm also hearing from constituents that are very frustrated with the number of issues. And of course, when you're door knocking, a lot of times you're going to hear the negative before you hear the positive. Agency rulemaking and difficulty communicating with agencies is right at the top of the list. And in a district that's almost 75% service-based industry, we're heavily invested in tourism. We're looking at all of the properties across Crow Wing County, and we're wondering what might be the next step in regard to buffers. Are we even going to be able to have, are we even going to be able to mow our yards next to a lake as time goes on? Or maybe have a spot where some folks might be able to put a lawn chair on a piece of sand? And then some unusual questions have come up over the course of the last season, and people are wondering, you know, what's going to happen, because we have a lot of deer hunting in the area, what's going to happen with things like drone use? What's that going to look like in the next 10 years? So those are some of the issues I'm hearing from constituents, and I will mention Representative Hornstein, that there was a constituent that at a door asked if we could put a big sticker on the train that said powered by coal.
Thank you, Representative Vice Chair Heintzman. And I will say, too, just so you know, that Representative Heintzman had a drone in my office yesterday. So it wasn't hovering or anything, but it was sitting on my desk. Representative Baker Finch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did just want to take this opportunity to share with you, although I've lived in the Twin Cities for a very long time, I am from northern Minnesota. I am a Leech Lake descendant, grew up in the Cass Lake area, so also come from a family, generations of harvesting wild rice, and so I just want to let you guys know that I can be a resource on those issues, although you might not know it.
Someone
from Roseville. And I also ice fishing, I deer hunt, and look just fine in orange.
not pink?
No pink.
Well, what do representatives from Roseville and Roseau have in common? So we'll find out as the session progresses. Anything else, members? I've got just a couple of quick things. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Heintzman, I think Ms. Zipko has a bill on drone usage with hunting that I introduced last year. So if you're interested in that. Mr. Chair, I think, you know, it's interesting. While we're going around, I decided to just search Google again and found a quote that might be apropos. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. Charles Dickens, A Tale of Two Cities. And I think that's kind of what we just heard here is people having different perspectives, but we're all here as Minnesotans. And so I hope we can take that tale of two cities and make it into a story of one Minnesota where there's things that we can agree on. I know that will be hard. I know that will be hard. But hopefully there's some things that we can agree on that we can work on.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. As Representative Hornstein knows, I'm easy to work with as long as you agree with me, right? So just a couple other housekeeping things here, just for information-wise.
in the next couple of days, we've got MPCA and DNR. They'll be coming in, and they'll be doing an agency overview. In the future, we're going to do an update on the implementation and so forth of buffers. We'll have an overview from Explore Minnesota. We'll have an overview with the Bowser Agency. Obviously, we're going to dive deeper into agency budgets and so forth. Oh, an important thing we was mentioned earlier, we'll do an update. I've talked to Mr. Meyer about doing an update on the CWD situation that they are working with on the Board of Animal Health as it currently is. And then we plan to have some hearings on rulemaking to see if we can't restore some common sense to rulemaking. And if you have suggestions, members, I'd be more than happy to work with you on those. Do we have anything else before us? With that, we're adjourned.